All right, back on the Young Turks. Heisenberg, I think, misunderstood what I was saying, or maybe he's joking. I don't get it. Anyway, Anna's here, obviously. How you doing, Casper?
I'm good. I'm good.
Your dress is very red.
I'm fucking living.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing.
All right. That's fun. Okay. Sounds good. I look forward to talking about that in a post.
Okay.
Heisenberg writes in, "Wow, King Richard, how petty of you." Oh, I get it. Sorry, I missed it. Richard Petty, King Richard, petty of him. Get it? I thought he was referring to King James, which I talked about earlier. Anyway, Gabby says, "Right wingers demanding you respect the American flag aren't just ironically waving Confederate flags, Nazi flags lately too." Damn. Okay. All right, we gotta go. I'm gonna leave it at that for now. Let's go forward. Casper, what do you have?
All right. I'm sure you talked about the NFL quite a bit. We're gonna talk about it a little bit more, just a little bit more. So let's start with Tom Brady.
Shout out.
Back during the election, Tom Brady, who is of course the quarterback for the New England Patriots, seemed to be supportive of Donald Trump. In fact, he had a Make America Great Again hat in his locker, which he has slowly but surely tucked away. And now recently, he decided to talk about Donald Trump's statements in regard to NFL players who refused to stand during the national anthem. He was on the Kirk and Callahan show, and here's what he had to say about Trump's comments to those who refused to stand.
I certainly disagree with, you know, what he said, and you know, thought it was just divisive. And you know, like I said, it's, you know, I just want to support my teammates, and I always set out. I'm never one that says, oh, that's wrong or that's right or that's, but I do believe in what I believe in. And I believe in bringing people together and respect and love and trust. And those are the values that my parents instilled in me. And that's how I try to live every day. And, you know, I've been blessed to be in a locker room with guys from all over the United States over the course of my career. Some of my great friends are from, you know, Florida, you know, Virginia, you know, New York, Montana, Colorado, Texas. I mean, I think one thing about football is it brings so many guys together, guys that you would never have the opportunity to be around, whether it was in college and all the way into the pros. And we're all different and we're all unique. And, you know, that's what makes us all so special.
So he was also asked about those who agree with Trump and actually disagree with those who refuse to stand for the national anthem. And here's what he had to say about it, and I totally agree with him. I think everyone has the right to do whatever they want to do. If you don't agree, that is fine. You can voice your disagreement. I think that is great. It's part of our democracy. As long as it is done in a peaceful, respectful way, that is what our country has been all about. At least that's what our country is supposed to be all about.
Yeah.
So I thought those were some interesting statements, and I was more curious to read what his fans had to say about his comments, because a lot of his fans are Trump supporters who are enraged about NFL players not standing for the anthem, and they think he's sold out. I don't know who he sold out to, but apparently you can't have a disagreement without selling out somehow.
To Elizabeth Warren, that's who he sold out to. Yeah. The senator from Massachusetts. Massachusetts is one of the most liberal states in the country, that the Patriots are obviously from that general area. And so that's the problem, right? The right-wing fans are given so much more of a voice. So people are like, oh, the fans don't want Kaepernick. Wait a minute, a lot of the fans do want Kaepernick, but they never get anywhere near the coverage.
Right.
There's Kaepernick's jerseys were selling like crazy, etc. But that didn't get, if you're a right winger though, you have more privileged voice. And so I'm sure that an overwhelming percentage of Massachusetts agrees with Tom Brady's latest statement, which by the way was not that bold. It's not like he was saying, oh yeah, Kaepernick is right. It's not like he was saying, yes, there is police brutality. He said, you could even argue that it was milquetoast. I have a lot of friends from all over the country because I've played sports with them. In other words,
right.
I have black friends and white friends and Latino friends, right?
His strongest statement was, I certainly disagree with what he said. That was his strongest statement. And of course, an argument could be made that that was milquetoast. That wasn't a strong statement. But coming from someone who supported Trump and had a MAGA hat in his locker, I think it's important for him to speak out, because right now I feel like there is this need to support your candidate regardless of what he or she does, and that's crazy. It's okay to criticize someone that you supported, a politician that you like. You are supposed to hold them accountable. And look, regardless of where you stand on the national anthem debate, you have to at least acknowledge that it's unacceptable for a president to refer to individuals who are practicing their First Amendment rights, sons of bitches. That is insane.
Now, look, I don't mind the vulgar language. It is a weird thing for the president to do it. And to me, the much worse part, and I think what begins to trigger First Amendment, actual First Amendment issues, is when the leader of the government says that somebody should be fired
Absolutely.
For what they said.
Yes.
And so when Brady says, I definitely disagree with what he said, it's not that bold a statement either, because he's saying, should his fellow players, some of his fellow players, be fired and be called sons of bitches for what they're doing. It'd be a little crazy for him to go in the other direction and go, oh, Trump is right. You know, I think a bunch of players in the NFL should be fired for speaking their mind. Mm-hmm. That would be an unbelievable statement. So, like, Trump put himself in a position where he couldn't win. He turned everyone against him, because saying that mm-hmm. their teammates should be fired means that all the players have to support Kaepernick. Whereas before, not a lot of them were supporting him, right? And he turned the coaches against him, he turned the general managers against him, and then he even turned the owners against him, because then he started saying people shouldn't go to the games, and the owners are like, whoa, that's not cool. Mm-hmm. So now they all disagree with his statements, because he's too stupid to make a rational argument, even for his own side. So look, and for the people who think that Brady was milquetoast there, that's the issue I brought up. I hear you, but he also has a right to be milquetoast. Like,
yeah,
I'll take it.
He's not, look, it would be one thing if he was this politically outspoken athlete and mm-hmm. then this situation occurs and he has a very mild statement, mediocre statement. But he doesn't, look, I don't know too much about Tom Brady to be fair, but he doesn't strike me as someone who engages in political discussions on a regular basis.
No, having that hat was the most political thing he'd ever done.
Right.
So, and look, and if you're LeBron James and Tamir Rice gets shot in Cleveland and then the cops double down about it, that's a moment where I was hoping that LeBron James would do something more political and stand up for justice. Now, as it turns out, belatedly, in my opinion, LeBron has done a lot more now. And he's also now supporting Steph Curry and the Warriors, et cetera, against Trump. And he's done a wonderful job recently. So he's become a little bit more political. But you're right, Brady has never been that guy. And
right.
So for him to come out and say Trump was definitely wrong, for a lot of folks, that's a big deal. So hey, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. So God bless, wonderful. I'm glad to see him sharing his opinion, an opinion that is hard to disagree with.
Right.
And lastly, I like that little reference that Anna made. It's very sly, how he tucked away the hat, like the tuck rule. Right, Anna?
Yeah, totally. See, I know stuff. I don't know what the tuck rule is. That was a total accident.
Of course.
What's the tuck? Don't even tell me.
Dead
I don't care.
Gone.
Yeah.
Long story.
Does it have to do with the jock strap? Is that the tuck rule?
No. No, it doesn't.
Okay.
No, it doesn't. Just right. Ask any Raiders fan what the tuck rule is.
Okay. All right. One more NFL related story for you that I think is worth sharing. Miami Dolphins safety Michael Thomas was asked about Donald Trump's statements in regard to those who refused to stand for the national anthem. And he got incredibly emotional as he talked about his family. Take a look.
I'm gonna tell you my first thoughts, but it just amazes me with everything else that's going on in this world, especially involving the US. That's what you're concerned about, my man. You're the leader of the free world. This is what you're talking about. So as a man, as a father, as an African American man, as somebody in the NFL, as one of those sons of bitches, you know, like, yeah, I took it personally, but at the same time, like I said in my Twitter post, it's bigger than me, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's bigger than me. I got a daughter. She's gonna have to live in this world. You know what I'm saying? And I'm gonna do whatever I gotta do to make sure, you know, she can look at my dad, look at her dad, and be like, hey, you did something, you tried to make a change. You feel me?
That's right.
Yeah. Football questions? You're good?
Wow.
Yeah, so Michael Thomas was one of the guys who originally took a knee. He took a knee last year along with Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. So he's one of the leaders of this movement. And so that's why when Trump said those sons of bitches who wouldn't stand for a flag, in a sense, he was talking directly about Michael Thomas. I'm sure he doesn't know Michael Thomas. He probably heard about Kaepernick, but not about Thomas. And it's a weird thing, the media. Like, you know, they get obsessed with Kaepernick, and I get it. And we've talked a lot about Kaepernick, but then other people take a knee and they're like, okay, whatever. That's just a secondary story. So we're not going to talk about Michael Thomas or right. Bennett or all these other guys who did it. Anyway, so. That's why they were asking him, because if Trump was talking about anybody that's in the league, he was talking about this guy. And he had, what he referred to earlier there was when he wrote on social media, this is bigger than us. Meaning, say that the idea of justice when it comes to police brutality and police violence against unarmed black men is an issue bigger than a football player. He's just trying to put a spotlight on it. And of course, because of Trump's overreaction, now this has spread like wildfire. We had the first baseball player take a knee yesterday, I believe, last night. And now some of his white teammates said they're going to take a knee, or at least one of them said they're going to take a knee with him tonight.
That's awesome.
And it's spread to the owners, it's spread to everybody now. And God bless Michael Thomas for being one of the leaders in that. And of course, the most powerful part was when he was talking about his daughter. And if you didn't hear exactly what he was saying, because he broke up a little bit there, he said, you know, what if she asked me, Daddy, what did you do when it mattered? And did you try to make a change? And he did. And that's a hell of a thing to be able to tell your kids, when it mattered, I stood up, or in this case, took a knee.
Yeah, I think that, and by the way, this is speculation on my part. I have no idea what's going on in his head. But he kind of lost his composure when he started thinking about his family, when he started thinking about his daughter. And it made me realize something I've always known, but I think sometimes we forget about it. Everyone wants the same thing, regardless of what your ethnic, you know, background is, regardless of where you live in the country or what your political affiliation is. We all want a better world for our families. And the world that he sees is one where, you know, his peers are murdered in an unjustified way without, you know, any weapons on them, without any wrongdoing. Or with some wrongdoing, but certainly nothing that warrants extrajudicial killings, right? And so he wants a better world for his kids, for his family. And you know, I'm sure seeing the kind of stuff that you see in the news on a regular basis worries him just as much as it worries us. So
yeah, no, and worries him probably more, because we don't have African American kids. And so yes, it's now happening to all the races, and I think police overreaction and police training is wrong, unfortunately, throughout the country. But if you see Tamir Rice being shot in 2 seconds flat when he was 12-year-old African American kid, and you got a 5-year-old daughter, as he said, and one day soon she'll be 12, and you know, and if nobody's gonna bother asking her anything, and they're just gonna pull up and shoot her, boy, you know, you would be very, very concerned. So just for 1 second, think about if you were in their shoes, if you're not African American. And you see another story in Ohio, a guy in a Walmart walking around with a toy gun from the Walmart because he was shopping. Cops come up, also shoot within 2 seconds. They don't ask questions. And boom, he goes down and he dies. And it's happened over and over again. And yes, the statistics bear out that it happens disproportionately to African Americans. So we've got to get better police training. We can't have them shooting at first sight. And now, you know, you see it happening to all the races, but more so to African Americans. And so if you're an African American like Michael Thomas, it might be a matter of life and death for you or for your kids to take a stand now. And so he did so bravely all the way back to last year when it was a very unpopular thing to do, at least according to the press. And he took that chance, and now a lot of people have joined him, and that's what bravery is all about.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, an update on Free Speech Week at Berkeley ended up being pretty awesome. We have some video footage for you and then other stuff that you will enjoy. So come back.
Oh, you're going to love the Fail Speech Week story. Okay, we'll come right back. We'll tell you all about it. All right, back on a Young Turks, the W Do writes in, as a Patriots fan, I'm proud that Brady stood with his team. but still won't watch until Kaepernick is on a team. Wow. All right. Well, bless your heart. I know Sean King, who's one of our contributors, has been doing that, trying to boycott the NFL until Kaepernick's back. That's too strong, man. So bless his heart. I have to confess that I haven't been part of that. I wish I were a vegan. I wish I had the power to withstand the NFL, but not so far. Anyway, Ruth Iverson says, how is kneeling disrespectful? So when you kneel before God, are you saying F you to God? Makes no sense. So of course, there's a lot of ways to interpret that. Okay, and our members of the day are Merrill Klein and Gary Jones. All the members get the show whenever they want. They're the only ones who can get that, commercial free. You get other network shows as well. You get shows just for your, just for the members, including the postgame shows that we do every day. Mm-hmm. So today in the postgame show, Anna is going to tell us an amazing story about an American hero who unfortunately was not treated as an American hero.
He literally saved the life of a US president, and his heroism was essentially minimized because of his sexual orientation. So
amazing story. We'll tell you about it there. Of course, to join and become a member, tytnetwork.com/join. Okay.
All right. Conservative agitators were planning on something known as Free Speech Week at Berkeley. Now, the whole point of this was, of course, to get a little bit of attention and to rile students up who are not in favor of their brand of conservatism. And so Milo Yiannopoulos, who got fired from Breitbart because of his comments in favor of pedophilia, was basically the person behind this, organizing it. And the student organization that wanted to host these conservative speakers did not meet the deadlines necessary to provide security and the infrastructure necessary to host the event. So as a result, they ended up canceling the event because they couldn't have it indoors. They could only host it outdoors. Now, the event was canceled after Free Speech Week's organizers couldn't meet Berkeley's deadlines for renting indoor venues on campus. So Yiannopoulos has said that the university tried to sabotage Free Speech Week plans by making it difficult for organizers to make logistical arrangements. Now, Milo decided to still show up at Berkeley and do a brief speech outside on the campus, and it didn't go well. There was only a handful of people, and there were more counter protesters, although the counter protesters were incredibly peaceful. There were no issues here. One person did get arrested for having a weapon, but there were no physical issues or altercations or anything like that. Now, Dan from the internet, Dan Evans, who is someone who works here at TYT, interns here every once in a while, shared a video because he is a student at Berkeley, and he decided to film everything to ensure that, you know, the story didn't get twisted in the media. Well, there was one student wearing a MAGA hat who was apparently trying to anger the counter protesters. He was yelling at them, attacking them, not physically, thankfully. And when Dan went up to him to ask him some questions, this is what happened.
Do you believe anything you talk about?
What?
Do you believe anything you talk about?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yes.
Then why are you provoking people? Tell them what you actually believe. Talk about your stances. No, you're saying there's mocking.
Wait.
You're just dancing.
You think that somebody...
Immigrants are welcome here.
Well, they won't let me talk.
Say it loud. Say it clear.
She won't let me talk.
Immigrants are welcome here.
Let him talk. Well, then I'm trying to have a debate.
Okay, then talk to me then.
Okay, well, I mean, like, first of all, like, I think if you come here legally, wait, you're young turds? Fuck that.
Oh, really? You want to talk to me because you got my organization? You want to talk to me?
Coward! 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 Coward!
There's so much to love about that video. First off, you are there for Free Speech Week. You're getting an opportunity to speak your mind. Why aren't you speaking your mind? What's the problem?
No, that was so wonderfully ironic. She won't let me speak. All right, go ahead and speak. Okay, great. Oh, you're with the Young Turks. Ah! Anyway, hey, listen. I don't know if you know this. A lot more people just saw you than the three people you were trying to talk to at that rally.
Yeah.
And so you would have had an opportunity right there to speak your mind and tell us all your brilliant right-wing ideas. And instead, you ran and ran and ran.
Right. And Dan even asked one of the counter protesters to stop chanting so we could hear him out, so we can actually hear his argument. He doesn't have an argument. He started with, I just think if you're in the country illegally, he couldn't finish his thought. And so you think he didn't see the TYT, you know, logo on Dan's clothing before he started talking? Of course he saw it. But once he realized he couldn't finish his thought, he's like, oh, you're with the Young Turds, F you, and he walked away. Just try to formulate your opinion before you get involved in this type of activism.
But this reminds me of a piece from Slate that we talked about on last week's show, where a reporter went up and asked all these people who were like, oh, freedom of speech, I just want freedom of speech. Okay, first of all, do they want freedom of speech for Kaepernick? No, he should be fired. Anyway, but put that aside for a second. I just want freedom of speech. And then so the reporter asked, okay, great, then speak to me. What is it that you would like? And they're like, I don't want to talk to a reporter. You know why? It's not that you're worried about freedom of speech. You know that your opinions are unpopular. You know that you're going to say things that are going to get you in trouble. Why are they going to get you in trouble? Because there's thought police? No, because you're going to say loathsome things and people are going to go, wow, you really believe that? Mm-hmm. That's a pretty terrible thing to say about other people. If you didn't think it was terrible and you thought it was wonderful, why wouldn't you share it with a camera?
Right, exactly. And look, I think the way this whole free speech week went down was perfect. Because think about it, Milo still appeared, okay? His fans knew about it. They could have went over there to see him. And only about a dozen people showed up.
Oh, so sad.
And so here's what would have made it 100 times worse. First of all, Milo's like, oh, it was a great success. Yeah, I'm sure it was. Right? 12 people came to see you. It was a great success. But it would have made matters worse, and he would have gotten what he wanted if people met him with violence, right? If people got up in arms. Like, protesting is fine, and I'm glad that the protesters kept it peaceful. The chants are fine, it's all good, right? But once you start throwing Molotov cocktails and damaging property and doing things like that, you are playing right into what they want. That is the exact response that they want. I mean, this was embarrassing for Milo.
What did we tell you from day one? Just let them speak and a dozen dudes will show up. That's exactly what almost happened here. Look, of course you do any protest you like, and God bless your heart, we love protests. But for them, they want the protests. He's an insignificant figure that no one in America, even the most loathsome right-wingers, won't hire. So just let him go out there with his 12 buddies, and the next time it'll be 7, and the next time it'll be 3, and it'll be wonderfully embarrassing. Don't worry, we'll send Dan from the internet, we'll record it, you'll get to laugh at him afterwards. And then finally, look, these guys are monumental liars, and even the other parts of the right wing are being to call out Nemo here. So right wing blogger Lucian Wintrich for the Gateway Pundit, very right wing website, said, to UC Berkeley spokesman Dan Mogiloff, according to the Bay Area News Group, quote, it was known that they didn't intend to actually go through with it last week and completely decided on Wednesday. So they knew they were not actually going to do it,
right,
but they wanted to play the victim. And so then Mogiloff says, wait, whoa, hold on a second, what exactly are you saying? Were you told by Milo Incorporated, was it a setup from the get-go? And Wintrich said, yes.
It was, and so let me give you a little more inside baseball that I wanted to talk about on Friday. So Friday before the show aired, I read an email. I get press releases from all sorts of media outlets, right wing, left wing, doesn't matter. And one of them was from a right wing outlet indicating that they're gonna cancel Free Speech Week because they're worried about Antifa violence. Okay, so they were already, you know, drawing this narrative about, oh, these violent lefties, and they're so offended by our speech that they're gonna meet us with violence. But that wasn't what was going on at all. As you just mentioned, they weren't planning on going through with it anyway. And even if they had planned on going through with it, Berkeley couldn't host them in the specific way that they wanted because they didn't meet the deadlines necessary to ensure that there was enough security and a police presence to ensure that everyone was safe. And by the way, Berkeley spends a ton of money to provide security for these events. Just to give you a few examples, UC Berkeley has incurred at least $1.4 million in security costs since February. That includes $600,000 for an appearance by conservative firebrand Ann Coulter, whose event was also canceled. The university also spent an estimated $600,000 for a talk earlier this month by conservative Ben Shapiro. And there was a lot of fear that his appearance would be met with violence. Luckily, it went off without a hitch. There was no issue there. But that's the way that it should be. It's frustrating that the university has to spend that kind of money, especially when it comes to people who are purposely doing this to agitate people. But again, just don't meet them with violence. Don't deal with it. Just let them fail as badly as Milo did this past weekend.
And so, by the way, if you're a university out there, don't worry. I'll take half of that, just $300,000, and you won't have any security issues. And just bring the Young Turks. And you know what'll happen? It'll actually be popular rather than unpopular.
Yeah.
Oh,
it will. No, it will be popular. No, I was just thinking, by the way, just to be clear, the $600,000 is not, it's for security. It's not for speaking fees. But who knows what they were offered in terms of speaking fees?
No, I know. Ben gets $20,000 a speech.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was reported when he was going to Berkeley earlier.
Did he get $20,000 for the Berkeley speech?
That's what I don't know about this particular one, but I read for an earlier Berkeley speech he was planned, they were giving him $20,000.
Wow.
Okay, so by the way, they rile up their own folks to get all riled up, like free speech, it's not really free speech, it's like literally paid speech. And so they get you all to do their publicity for them, and then did you guys get $20,000 if you're MAGA guys out there? No, but they did, right?
Right.
I'm just keeping it real. And people allowed to get paid for speeches. God bless their hearts.
And
okay?
I'm a lot less concerned about Ben Shapiro getting 20 grand than someone like Milo getting 20 grand. You know? Yeah. Because at least Ben Shapiro, even though I don't agree with a lot of what he says, he seems to be genuine in his beliefs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, anyways, I'll leave it at that. All right. Look, we got more for the online audience. We got a couple more stories for you guys. Including what's going on in Puerto Rico. So we'll share that with you when we return on tytnetwork.com. And if you want to get the whole show, of course, you can always become a member, tytnetwork.com/join. So we'll see you in a sec. All right, back on the Young Turks. Mrs. Data writes in, I just realized he ran away to a safe space, not place, but it's still funny, LOL. And Berkeley might have safe spaces, so maybe that's where he was going. And he got triggered by his shirt.
Yeah.
Chris writes in, hey, by Trump standards, that was a great crowd. Tremendous. CNN just wouldn't turn their cameras enough. Fake news. That's hilarious, guys. Okay. All right, Anna, you got two more stories for us.
Yes, all right. The situation in Puerto Rico following Hurricane Maria is dire, to say the least. Things have gotten so bad that people are looting and the streets have become extremely unsafe. And as a result, authorities and politicians in Puerto Rico have now started, I just blanked, what is it called? When people have to go home at a certain
curfew.
Time. Curfew, thank you, sorry about that. All right. As a result, authorities in Puerto Rico have started a curfew, and anyone who breaks that curfew will face jail time. Now, there's no electricity, there's no light, and so after dark, that's when the looters come out, that's when people commit crimes. But many in Puerto Rico are saying that the authorities are going after those who are not following through with the curfew rather than those who are looting. One person who owns a gas station says that his store has been completely destroyed. It'll cost about $17,000 just for it to be up and running again. And another issue that I'm noticing is the response by the US government for those who are suffering from the storm in Puerto Rico has been much slower than the response that we saw in Texas and also in Florida. So if you take a look at these photos, it's just terrible. The flooding is extremely bad. And as I mentioned in earlier reporting, one of the dams was expected to fail. So as a result, about 80,000 people were evacuated from their homes. But yeah, it's just not good.
So more amazing facts. 100% of the power grid was in ruins. Landline phones do not work at all. And the main TV stations had gone off the air. And they were expecting to be in a blackout for 4 days, because that's what the governor warned it ahead of time. And on the fifth day, little had improved. Part of the reason that the governor then couldn't say anything is, one, the power's out. So nobody can get messages from the governor in the way that they are used to. Number two, his communication was out. So he couldn't communicate with many parts of Puerto Rico. So this is, in a lot of ways, as bad as it gets. And instead, we all are, including myself, talking about the NFL and taking a knee, et cetera, throughout the weekend and today. And so, unlike Trump and the federal government, we actually care about Puerto Rico, so we're also covering this story. And we talked about it on Friday's show. It's a strange thing, the proximity. The closer you are to home, the more people care. So this is per capita, and for the folks in Puerto Rico, worse than what happened in Houston, worse than what happened in Florida, Harvey or Irma. But yet it's not on the mainland, and Puerto Rico is a US territory, but it's in a weird gray zone.
Right.
So cameras aren't really there. I mean, barely. We've got some pictures and video there. Is it wall-to-wall coverage? Come on, you know it's not wall-to-wall coverage. You know that the NFL issue that Trump brought up got 1,000 times more coverage. And and so that's on all of us. That's on the media for going, nah, Puerto Rico, even though they're in really, really bad shape now and can use the help. And then it's on also, you know, look, there's some wonderful organizations that are working to get them help. But at the same time, all the people that are doing, you know, giant drives to help the people of Houston and Florida, which is wonderful, by the way, they should also do it for Puerto Rico. And again, some of them are just and look into efforts to help Puerto Rico in any way you can. And we'll try to put some in the description box of this video. And then, of course, most importantly, the people who have all the money, which is the government.
Yeah, there needs to be a better federal response to the devastation in Puerto Rico, and that just hasn't been the case. So let's quickly go to graphic 14 and hear from the governor. Ricardo Rosello says that he called on the Pentagon to provide more help. He said there were helicopters and planes nearby that they need to be allowed to use. He was quoted as saying, whatever relief package we have, whatever impact we have, we are US citizens, we shouldn't be the lesser for it. And so he certainly feels like the response by the US government hasn't been equal compared to what other states dealt with when it came to these extreme storms. And again, the damage done in Puerto Rico is in some ways worse because of the lack of communication, the lack of power, the power grid is completely out. It got so bad that 13 prisoners escaped a prison. Luckily, they were able to find about 8 of them, but there are still several on the loose. And it's become incredibly unsafe, which is why people are forced to go indoors as soon as it's dark outside. And so it's just terrible. And I don't even think people realize that Puerto Ricans are Americans. It is a US territory. So even if it doesn't feel like, you know, it's part of the US because it's not part of our mainland, it's still human lives that we're talking about. And, you know, I think Donald Trump's tweets over the weekend in regard to this whole NFL situation not only uncovered, you know, what his priorities are, but it was also done to kind of distract from bigger things that are happening. Right? Mm-hmm. The healthcare debate that's happening. You know, the fact that Republicans were trying to sweeten the deal for Alaska senators and other senators that were holding out on voting yes. Like, that's a big story. The Russia investigation, that's a big story. Trump wanted to distract from that. And it's all about selfish reasons. It's all about selfish, you know, egotistical Donald Trump, as opposed to being a leader and looking out for people who are really suffering right now.
Well, look. I just don't think he cares about him. That's the other part of it.
Of course he doesn't.
You know, I don't think that he's sophisticated enough to think, look, I'll do a distraction here because I don't want people to focus on climate change. It's obviously real. It's making these storms so much more severe. Look at what's happened with Irma, Harvey, and Maria, let alone Jose and the others. No, he just thinks, hey, I'll go to Alabama and rile up a crowd against Kaepernick. Gee, I wonder why. And it's like, I don't think he consciously thinks it's just Puerto Ricans. I don't really care about them. I just think that he shows it in what he does.
He might consciously think that.
Yeah. No, no, my point is that either way,
yeah,
he doesn't care about you. And he's not, the cavalry is not on its way. And he's not focused on it. He doesn't put out a statement. It's like what we saw when a mosque is attacked. Doesn't care, doesn't put out a statement. If it's a Muslim doing the attack, it's a national emergency, tweet after tweet. He does it immediately. He doesn't wait. Mm-hmm. In Charlottesville, neo-Nazis attack. He waits and waits and waits and waits. And he says, I like to get all my facts first. You know, and so in the case of Puerto Rico, you know, put aside, look, Charlottesville is super important, and those all those different kinds of attacks against Muslims, by Muslims, all important. But this is a US territory that is decimated. It's a giant issue. And it seems like certainly he hasn't done anything that makes us believe that he cares or knows or is in any way going to help. It's amazing. His indifference is stunning.
Yeah, it's really depressing. All right, one final story for you guys, and it's super important. One of the heads of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission is now indicating that this regulatory body will not necessarily regulate the financial industry as aggressively as it did during the Obama administration. Now, keep in mind that during the Obama administration, this federal body was given more power in order to prevent the type of behavior on Wall Street that led to the 2008 economic meltdown. So these are the people who would police big banks and investors and make sure that things like derivatives trading wasn't happening anymore. Well, it turns out that that whole regulatory system is about to implode, and I'll tell you how.
Okay, just real quick, of course derivatives trading is still allowed, although I'm not sure that should be, and of course I think they'll probably crash the economy again. But that there were tighter controls on derivatives trading, because out of control derivatives trading is what caused the 2008 crash. And so it was the most logical thing in the world to say, hey, we've got to have some guidelines for that trading, otherwise these guys wind up taking outsized risk. Because as usual, they have privatized the gains, but when those derivatives explode because they're very, very risky, well, what do? They socialize the losses. They made the taxpayers pay for their losses.
With the bailouts, exactly.
With the bailouts. And so if you're not in favor of regulating that, then I think you misunderstand the word and the concept. Because if you say, oh no, it's a great thing for them to take all the gains and put it in their pockets, and if they blow it, mm-hmm, then I should pay their bills. That's insane.
That is insane. And I think regardless of where you fall on the political spectrum, both those on the left and right were pretty infuriated with the bailouts.
That's right.
Now, let's go to James McDonald. James McDonald is the director of enforcement for the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Again, this regulatory body. And his argument isn't that we should deregulate. His argument is, well, we don't necessarily need to do the oversight because these companies and these banks can just, you know, do their own oversight. They can self-police, right? Here's what he said. It will increasingly look, now this is according to the New York Times. It will increasingly look to banks and other financial institutions to come clean on their own about misconduct and problems in the market. So here's an actual quote from James McDonald, and this is based on a draft speech that the New York Times got their hands on. We start with the shared understanding that the vast majority of businesses want to comply with the law. No, they don't. No, they don't. The vast majority of businesses want to make sure that their bottom line is taken care of. And in this case, that is exactly what they'll do. He continues to say, we also recognize that no matter how much corporate leaders may want to foster compliance within the company, when they detect misconduct, their decision whether to voluntarily report it often comes down to their perception of whether they'll be treated fairly. So think about what he's saying there. He's essentially saying, they can police themselves, And in order to ensure that they police themselves, we just need to make sure that the penalties for bad behavior is lessened, right?
That's so insane. Okay, so let's break this down. Are all companies bad? No. Okay, of course not. They're amoral. They have no morality. It's not a human being. It's a legal fiction. So will executives wind up trying to maximize profit? Well, by law they must. That's their job, is to maximize profit. If you said, okay, well, will they sometimes go beyond the current rules to maximize profit? Well, we have an enormous history of them doing that. And the reason that they do it is because they look, if we make 10 bucks by going beyond the rules and then we get a penalty of $2 or $3, okay, well, I just made $7. So I've maximized profit. Now, it's all about the incentives and disincentives and the laws and what is allowed and not allowed, what is punished and right, not punished, what has consequences and doesn't. So this is about people who are breaking the law. Because if you're not breaking the law, then it doesn't apply to you anyway. And the guy says, oh, we have a shared understanding with the corporations. Oh, I'm sure you do, with these financial corporations. And so, since we're talking about the robbers here, specifically the people who are breaking the law, can you imagine if they put out an equal statement, almost the same exact words, but about other types of robbers? If they said, no, for people robbing banks, we have a shared understanding with them. If they turn themselves in, we will cut their penalties by 3/4. So I'm sure that they'll want to turn themselves in.
It's absurd. It's absurd, and it essentially paves the road for, you know, even if they don't turn themselves in, which they won't, it creates this standard or this idea that, you know, if they get caught, well, the penalties won't be that bad. And so, you know, the number that you just laid out is exactly what he had proposed in his speech, and then he just kind of erased it because he realized that maybe it won't play well to the public. McDonald said in the draft speech and in an interview that the agency expected to reduce penalties by roughly 75% for those that fully cooperate. In rare instances, he said, cases could be dropped altogether.
If you go to the bank, if you go to the cops and you go, oh, I just robbed a bank. Well, in some cases, they'll say, oh my God, well, that's so nice of you to turn yourself in. You're just free to go. Oh, I just stole that guy's car. But you know what? I went for a joyride, which, by the way, is also a crime. And then, but I brought it back and I decided to turn myself in. Oh, take a load off, man. That's all right. Go back home. It's okay. I just murdered someone, but that's okay. I turned myself in.
Yeah.
Oh, free to go. And it would never apply to any other crime. But when it comes to financial crimes, which, by the way, costs us more than any mugging, times 1,000, times 1,000,000, literally. So oftentimes times 1,000,000,000. Okay, if you do a mugging in the street, you're gonna go to prison for a long time. You do a mugging on Wall Street, they go, well, we have a shared understanding that we're gonna cut your penalties by 3/4, and we might drop it all together. And don't worry, we're just gonna rely on you to report your crimes instead of us investigating your crimes. Why don't you just say, there's no more law, there's no more rule of law?
Yeah, lawlessness. It's lawlessness for people working in the Trump administration is completely fine when it comes to the financial industry. But you know, if you want to kneel during the national anthem because you're outraged over a 12-year-old who got shot within 2 seconds because he was playing with a toy gun at a park, well, then you're a bad guy and you should be completely demonized in the media. I mean, these are the people who rob us, and this is a regulatory body that's, by the way, paid through our tax dollars, that's supposed to protect us from this, you know, predatory behavior by the big banks. And by the way, you want to make the argument that, oh, these big banks, they want to do right by us, they want to follow the law. I mean, the Wells Fargo story just happened. I know it feels like it's been an eternity because there's been so much news, but remember, Wells Fargo was opening accounts under people's names without even letting them know. These are their clients, their customers.
We don't just trust people to follow the law. We have cops so that they will follow the law. And when it's cops on the street, Trump administration goes, yeah, great, fantastic. When it's cops on Wall Street, they go, no, 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 no. Self-reporting. So let's break that down further. First of all, this is actually a bipartisan problem. Yes, Obama was better in regards to increasing enforcement at this particular commission. But his attorney general said that some of these bankers were too big to jail. He didn't use those words, but he literally said in open testimony in Congress that prosecuting some of the bankers could cause economic problems that would be worldwide, and so that it was too risky to prosecute bankers. You're giving them a get out of jail free card. So Obama did that. Who's the one who deregulated this particular commodity futures trading commission in the first place? Bill Clinton. And he said, they don't need that much regulation on derivatives. No one has ever been more wrong. It turns out, no, they needed a lot of regulation on derivatives. And since you took away the regulations, they went nuts, took too much risk. Because guys, if you're at a casino and somebody says, here is someone else's $100, you take as much risk as you like and you'll get to keep all the winnings. You won't do a 1-to-1 bet, you'll probably do a 1-to-100 bet, because even if you only have 1% chance of winning, you could win so much money, and if you lose it, it's not your money.
Yeah.
You have no downside. The taxpayers are going to bail you out. And they knew this, and so Clinton was wrong, Obama was wrong. Now Trump has, of course, put it on steroids.
Just to give you some numbers, because he has put it on steroids. Deregulation is something that he's been promising Wall Street. So monetary penalties imposed by three main entities that police Wall Street, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority were down sharply in the first half of 2017 compared with similar stretches in previous years.
The cops are off of Wall Street. There's no rule of law. And you know what you're going to have? You're going to have chaos, anarchy, wild risk taking, because it makes sense. It's logical to take wild risk taking if it's not your money and you're going to make more money the more risks you take. So they just are letting them run roughshod, and it is going to have disastrous consequences, I guarantee it. More. They say, well, part of the problem as to why we can't do enforcement here is because they are chronically and acutely under resourced. That's a quote. Well, then why don't we fix that? Could you imagine, we're not going to catch murderers and rapists anymore? Why not? Because the cops are chronically and acutely under-resourced. So maybe we should give them more resources. No, let's give them less resources.
Right.
And let the murder and rape happen, because, well, there's nothing we can do. No, there's something you can do. You're just choosing not to do it.
By the way, the person who said that was employed under the Obama administration. And so you're right, it is a bipartisan issue. It's just that with Republicans, this issue is on steroids. The deregulation and the lack of oversight is increased and much more noticeable. And they're just completely honest about it. I mean, think about the fact that McDonald in this case felt comfortable initially saying in that draft speech and in interviews that they planned on cutting penalties for these banks by 75%.
Another thing that was in his draft speech that he took out because they realized, oops, New York Times has got this story probably, and we're going to catch a lot of heat for it, is he talked about a partnership with the banks who were in violation of the law. Could you imagine? Well, the cops have done a partnership with the bank robbers.
Crazy.
But they have. In this case, they have. So let me tell you about both these guys, because James McDonald's the commission's director of enforcement, laugh along with me. And then there's Giancarlo, who is the actual chairman appointed by Trump. And he is what they called, the New York Times called, a free market devotee who is respected on both sides of the political aisle. Of course he is. Because both sides of the political aisle get paid off by Wall Street in the form of campaign donations and independent expenditures. Mm-hmm. So there, he's very well respected. What does free market devotee mean? It could mean something positive if they actually stuck with the meaning. Now it means no laws, no rules, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. We're going libertarian, we're going Somalia. There's no rules anymore, there's no government. Just do whatever the hell you want. And both sides are like, great idea. And Trump is like, no enforcement. No, whatever little that Obama was doing, we're going to cut that, as Anna read to you earlier. So let's talk about whether James McDonald is fundamentally dishonest or an incredibly stupid person. Okay, let's keep it real here. Because as I'll explain to you here, that I believe those are your only two choices here. Because he says, look, companies from time to time can make mistakes, this is another quote from him, or have a few bad actors. you really misunderstand corporations that much? Again, they're not evil. Okay, that's preposterous. They're not humans. But they are built to make money. So when you think or you misunderstand and think, oh golly gee, every time they break the law and wind up making a lot more money, that was just an honest mistake, or it was just a few bad actors, not actual incentives and disincentives of the system, you are either a grade A moron, and maybe they put you in that position because it's a country of 330 million people, and they're like, can we find someone stupid enough to actually believe that? They're like, hey, look, there's James McDonald, and there's Giancarlo. Let's put them in a position. Oh, golly gee, nobody wants to make money in corporations, but just a few bad people would like to make more money, and we let them by having no laws or rules.
Yeah.
Oh, golly gee, okay? Or, you know, you're not that stupid. You know they're going to break the law, and you know you're not going to enforce it, and that you were hired by the Trump administration to make sure that you're not the director of enforcement, you're the director of non-enforcement. And you know what you're going to do, James McDonald? I pretty much guarantee it. After the Trump administration, you're going to go work as a lawyer for one of those banks. And you're going to make a ton of money. And then you're going to say, golly gee, how did that happen? I wound up making millions of dollars from the companies who I chose not to enforce the penalties against. What another lucky break for the people in charge, for the people in the establishment, for the people in the elite. I thought Trump said he was going to drain the swamp.
Ugh.
No, no, no. This is the swamp, and it just got a lot muddier, murkier, dirtier. And now there are no cops left on Wall Street. God help us all. Okay, we are out of time, folks. Way out of time. Thank you, Anna Kasparian, for picking that story. Super important. And we'll take a quick break here for all the members. Come back, because Anna has another amazing story about an American hero who's unfortunately whose life was ruined by another American hero. That story has a lot of twists and turns.
Yes.
So that's at the postgame. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. All right.
Bye-bye.